This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. November is a month when, across the country, we acknowledge the efforts of family caregivers. AARP Hawaii celebrated the efforts across the state with the program Caregivers and Cake. Amy Goyer has been traveling around the U.S., reaching out to families, applauding their efforts to care for their loved ones.
AARP Hawaii wanted to do something for local family caregivers to treat them, to honor them and show them appreciation and have a special time for them. So that's the idea behind Caregiving and Cake, is to give them some inspiration, some hope, some very practical tips that I'm going to share and that they can share with each other. But also, it's just something special because family caregivers do so much and we want them to know we value them.
Yeah, it's basically a hug.
Exactly. It's a big warm hug, and hopefully we'll get to actually give some in-person warm hugs too tonight.
And so you do this as your day job, but you shared earlier that you took care of your grandparents and your parents, and so you know what it's like because you've been through it.
Exactly. Yeah, I was about 20, 21 years old when my parents moved to Arizona from Ohio, so my grandparents were in Indiana. So I was closer. I graduated with a degree in music therapy, and I was working in the field of aging. So I was kind of I'm the youngest of four girls. I was sort of the one that it made sense, you know, to do that. And I would go back and forth and take my grandmother had Alzheimer's disease, and my grandfather was her primary caregiver, and my dad was an only child, so there was no family there. My mom's mom, I was sort of the respite worker because my cousins and my aunt and uncle would help her more. So then my dad eventually developed Alzheimer's also. So about 10 years ago, I moved from Washington, D.C. out to Phoenix to take care of both of them. And my mom passed away in 2013. And I was caring for my sister also, who lived in Maryland. So back and forth. She had Cushing disease. And she passed away in 2014. And then my dad just passed away a little over a year ago in June of 2018.
And so you are trying to share what helped you during that time.
Yes, I wrote a book called Juggling Life, Work, and Caregiving for AARP, and it was published by the American Bar Association. And that outlines everything from assessing the situation and you're really getting clear about what you as a caregiver can do and how you build your team to do the rest of the things that you can't do, taking care of yourself as a caregiver, and then all the practical things, managing the health care, the legal and financial aspects, caring for someone at home or in a facility. And then I cover end of life and life after caregiving, too. It's such a new world to most caregivers. And I had the advantage of working in the field of aging for, well, then about 25 years, now over 35 years. So I knew more than most, and it was still very hard for me. So there's always new things coming up. My dad was a veteran also, and so figuring out and navigating the VA healthcare system, and he also got aid and attendance financial benefits, really arduous. Worth the effort because they were life-saving for us, but very difficult. And we try to help caregivers learn how to navigate that journey. And that's why AARP has put so much effort into our online family caregiving site and the care guides we have there that kind of help you walk through those things.
Right. And I just printed that out. It is a nice guide and a blueprint is to,
right,
you know, things, the priority, mm-hmm, and things you need to look out for.
Yes, you're speaking of the Prepare to Care guide we have, which you can order a print copy or you can download it on your computer. And we have several different versions. We have it in Chinese, we have it in Spanish, we have it also a military family caregivers guides that outline some of those really specific things to caring for a veteran.
So you're going around the country talking about this because this is the month that we focus on caregivers.
Yeah, this is National Family Caregivers Month, and so we really want to honor and elevate the family caregivers who are truly the backbone of the long-term care system and really providing so much care. We know there are about 41 million family caregivers in the U.S., about 157,000 in the state of Hawaii. And the nationally, the value of the care that they're providing is about $470 billion. Here in Hawaii, it's, I believe, $2.1 billion. It's very significant. And we know that family caregivers are very isolated, and often they don't get that appreciation. So it's really important that if you know a caregiver in your life, thank them.
And then as far as managing, I guess, your sanity as you try and, you know, divide your time between caring for an elderly parent or a spouse or a sibling. And then, you know, you need you time.
Oh, yes. Yes. And that's usually at the bottom of the list. We put ourselves last. And the bad thing about that is that in a very practical way, we have to take care of ourselves. I liken it to a car. I had an incident that happened to me where I thought, oh, my gosh, my car actually runs better on a full tank of gas. Well, duh, right? But that was my aha moment because I realized I expected myself to run on empty and be just as efficient. That's not practical, right? So if you look at it that way, taking care of yourself, doing things that fill you up, is actually a very practical thing. It's not selfish to take care of ourselves.
So you need a release.
You need to vent sometimes. You know, we recently started a Facebook Family Caregivers Discussion Group, and you can go into Facebook and look for it. And I'm in there every day. I'm moderating, and people vent. You know, sometimes you just got to say, this was a really hard day, or, you know, I feel like I failed at this or that. And then you get that support from the other caregivers. And just sometimes you just got to allow yourself to feel kind of bad a little bit so that you can pick up and keep going, because that's success. Resilience is success as a caregiver. You can't fix everything or cure diseases or do all of that, but you can be there. And just showing up is success.
And here in Hawaii, because we have the diversity that we do, and probably in a lot of the cultures, Asian cultures, Pacific Island cultures, mm-hmm. where you take care of your own versus, let's say, hiring staff to do that. We probably see maybe more of that here in the islands.
It's very much within different cultural groups. There are expectations and norms that family provide this care. The difference is that people are living longer with more chronic illnesses, and caring for our loved ones as they age has gotten more complicated. So, you know, you need to give yourself permission to, yes, I'm being there, I'm coordinating the care for my parent or my spouse or whoever it is. I'm living up to that expectation. I may be doing it a little differently than in the past because I have to work or because I have other people I'm caring for also, and that it's more complicated. But it's okay to seek and accept help, and you're still living up to that responsibility.
Right. So if it means you're feeling tired, you can let yourself feel tired.
Yes.
And give yourself permission because you need your you time.
Yes, and people often complain about feeling guilty. And that's, I always say guilt is our constant companion as caregivers, because you can't be 10 places at once. It's okay. You know, acknowledge that guilt. Like, sometimes you just got to let yourself feel kind of lousy about it. But then pick yourself up and you keep going forward. So I agree with you. You know, sometimes you just got to let yourself feel whatever you're feeling. Don't try to swallow it. It doesn't help. But do that and express it in safe and healthy ways. And then you're more able to move forward.
And then what do you do if you're dealing with, let's say, someone who tends to be more difficult, whether it's something as part of an illness or they just get crotchety as they get older?
Yes.
You know, how do you deal with that?
You know, a lot of people, I tell people, remember why you're doing this, because people who feel like they don't have a choice when they're caregiving don't weather the experience as well. They will come out of it, you know, with anger and resentment, and their health is worse and everything. So I say, remember why you're doing it. Now, for me, it was out of love. I have a wonderful family, wonderful parents, my sister, everyone. For some people, it's a sense of duty or responsibility. But the important thing to remember is that you are choosing to do it. I've been in this field more than 35 years, and there are millions of people out there who have no one looking out for them. And it's not because they don't have family. It's just simply people are not making that choice. So give yourself credit for making that choice.
And then do you see a lot more of the caregiving falling on women versus men? You know, like the siblings, the brothers mm-hmm. aren't doing their fair share, maybe? I don't know.
It's interesting. It's changing. Nationally, now they're about 60% women are family caregivers and about 40% men. Used to be more like 70-30. And among millennials, younger caregivers, 1 in 4 are family caregivers are millennials. And among millennials, it's 50-50, 50% men, 50% women. So we're seeing a shift here. Part of that's because the care ratio is changing, that we're having fewer potential caregivers for every older person over the age of 80. So, you know, it's not just a given that there's going to be a woman in the family to do it. But it's also just people are you know, working as teams and everyone's playing a role.
And is there a delicate way to handle a situation, let's say when the person you're providing care for doesn't want an outsider to come in and wants a family member to help with their care?
That's so hard because so many people tell me that my mom only wants me or my husband only wants me. And it's understandable because they feel safe with you, but you also have to work perhaps, or you have children you're raising or have other family members, things you got to take care of yourself. So one of the important things to do is to explain to your loved one that you love them, they are your priority, you're doing this, but you understand the need to take care of yourself in this situation, and that it would be helpful to you if they would allow you to get some help. And sometimes if you frame it that way, that they're actually helping you by allowing this, it's a little more palatable. Sometimes it takes a while for them to catch on, and sometimes they're so happy with the new person that you have coming in, and they get socialization, which they don't realize they're missing, that it actually ends up being even better.
So it's a little different dynamic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. Let me thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and thanks for all you caregivers out there for all you're doing.
That was AARP's Amy Goyer, who's been reaching out to caregivers across the islands. She wrote a book sharing strategies for caregivers. For links, head to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org. This is The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Coming up, your backyard quiz. For today's quiz, we remember longtime U.S. Senator Daniel K. Inouye. During his lifetime, there was no doubt that he was a master at securing federal funding for Hawaii. Those efforts led to many projects, from the Pacific Missile Range facility at Barking Sands on Kauai to the launch of the Maui supercomputer, protection for Hawaiian monk seals, honu and nene goose, and bus service throughout the state. Although he is credited for earmarking funds for many Hawaii projects and programs, we're told he disliked having things named in his honor. After he died in 2012, however, several projects have been named or renamed for him, such as the Honolulu International Airport, Saddle Road, a Matson container ship, and a Maui telescope. However, there was one place that was named for him while he was still alive. Can you name this place? Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. If you think you know the answer, the first one to get it right gets a reusable tote bag that tells people you got it right.
Support for the Backyard Quiz comes from the real estate agents and staff of Locations, proudly supporting HPR's commitment to sharing local stories of Hawaii's people and places. Locations, welcome home.
Caregiving is something Emmy Tumimbang knows about. She just produced a special about someone many people care about, Willie Kay. She and I worked together at KITV decades ago, and it was fun to catch up. Tamimbang and Willie are also dear, longtime friends, and they invite you to spend part of the Thanksgiving holiday with them with the show, which is all about the attitude of gratitude.
You know, his attitude of illness, you know, and I, you know, I remember asking him, is this reversible? This was 2 years ago. He said, no, I just have to go on clinical trials and whatever they have, whatever the flavor of the month medication. I mean, he just made fun in a good way just to keep positive. But I've been following him for 2 years. And yeah, it's been hard on him lately, more so than before. And so I think he's kind of reaching a place where he's a lot more thoughtful about the future. And, you know, he said, sick or no sick, we really don't know how much time we have. And he says, you just have to own the moment that's right in front of you.
And you have a way of telling stories, but this story with Willie is special to you.
Yeah, it started a long, long time ago when I first heard about this bad Okole, you know, Willie Kay with the bandana and the, you know, the Delilah or Samson hair. And I said, okay, I can do that interview. So he said, meet me up at Tantalus. And I said to my cameraman, you better be right there because I don't know what this guy's up to. And he came on his motorcycle and he said, hey, come get on. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be on the 6 o'clock news leading it instead of a feature. But it was sort of interesting. I never did quite. No, I did ask him because I did ride and I hung on to him. And I said, so how long you been doing this, Mr. Willie Kay? Oh, I just started last week. I'm going down Tantalus. But it was really an interesting sign of things to come because our friendship has been over 25 years. And you know, I followed him and. Oh, in fact, he used to tell my husband, because his big moment was O Holy Night.
Yes,
and my Christmas show. And he told my husband, hey, only your Filipino wife can get me to wear a tuxedo and shoes and shiny shoes. And I don't even have Filipino blood.
And for folks who don't know, Emmy's husband is Jim Burns, Judge Burns, who passed. And he had an illness and you took care. You were his caregiver for a long time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we both do news,
yes.
But man, getting temperature and looking at how to crush pills and make it into liquid form, because my husband had throat cancer, so I had to take care of him with a feeding tube, and it's just another skill set, Catherine. I mean, it's not like television, right? So I was stressed. I was my husband's lifeline. I'd never been in that position before, so it was a really difficult, difficult time.
And then you had some health challenges of your own.
Well, the health challenges was first, and I had a ruptured brain aneurysm, and my husband and I would argue, and he'd go, hey, you're not supposed to go before me, you know, and I said, well, I can't help that, but high blood pressure, which is something all Filipinos have, because it's DNA and diet, and that's what caused it, but my neurologist said it's been the years of deadlines, and now I have a whole other definition of the word deadline.
Oh, okay. So when Willie called to tell you about his illness, I mean, you had come from a place then where you'd gone through the stresses of dealing with healthcare.
Yeah, and the same illness, cancer. And I was devastated. I thought, oh no, God, please, I can only handle so much, right? Because I had taken care of my mom and different relatives. And cancer is so prevalent. I mean, it's got to be an epidemic, you know? But I promised Jim, who loved Willie Kay, they were pretty much best of friends, that I would do this, you know, and before my husband died, he said, hey, you better do something on Willie. And I said, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it wasn't about his illness. It was supposed to be about his life and how he's transformed from heavy rock metal to Nissan Dharma, you know, Pavarotti in one full swoop. I mean, he is so talented. And I never understood that until I had an interview with, okay, Jack Johnson, Willie Nelson, Steve Tyler, Marty Dredd, Mick Fleetwood. And they all said that Willie is a phenomenon. I mean, there's no one like him. He can just jump on stage with us, be our backup. You don't have to tell him what key or what chords. He just jumps in and he's there and he does it perfectly. And, you know, so here's Willie Kay as we know him, this fabulous all genre of music. And now, you know, you're going to hear him talk and see a deeper side to him. In fact, Robert Pennybacker, one of my co-writers and co-producers, said he is so astute. He is so full of wisdom. And I never knew that side of him either until this moment. And when, you know, as we were getting closer, I said, hey, when do you think we can do this? Because I've been exhausted, Catherine. Even though my husband's been gone for almost 3 years, it was very difficult for me. I said, oh, can I do this next year, you know, for 2020? And it was Willie who said, nah, we do them sooner than later. That's all he needed to tell me. You know, there was no other explanation. And I think because we've been good friends, you know, the fewer words, you get it. And he knew I had just gone through this with Jim. So it's in his own way that he's saying, yeah, time to do it. Let's do it. This guy grew up on Oahu. He went from Kohio Park Terrace to his life now. And he says in the interview, if you wouldn't have noticed, I would probably have been in prison. I mean, I would be in prison right now if I was still living at the Terrace. And, you know, short of him saying how bad he was and how awful his life was, he had 14 siblings, two different families, and they were blended. And he had Hanai, you know, Hawaiian style. So he was always sort of the person to take care of everybody. And, you know, that's the Hawaiian style. And he's full-blooded Hawaiian, which brings up another important thing why I feel this story is got to reach more people, and that is a recent study came out that Hawaiians, male in particular, have the highest mortality rate for cancer. It just came out, and I'd kind of known this, and you know, so Willie was sharing, and he does on TV, he goes, my father died of cancer, my grandfather died of this, and my brother just died last week, you know, and his sister's on radiation. You just sit there and you think, and yet the man is the most talented entertainer to come out of Hawaii, and he's just doing what he can to take care of his family and extended family. Because somebody said, how come he's singing so much? Why doesn't he just stay home and rest? Because it's a need, a necessity. And he told me just the other day, hey, if I go on stage, that's the way I want to go. I said, really? He said, yeah, I'm not afraid. I said, you're not afraid? I mean, you don't have any fear? And he goes, I'm done with the fear. I've already experienced it. And he says, every day I look at my two daughters, you know, I can't fear because I have to think about what I can do for them now. I mean,
he's so generous in heart.
But he's also, you know, so forwarding in his thinking. And that's why he says, you cannot be depressed. He actually says it while he's going through, you know, the radiation. He goes, you cannot be depressed. I think he goes, depression shortens your life. But if you live for every moment, it extends. And, you know, maybe that's the part of my doing this that made such a difference for me. And I've really come to understand. I mean, after I lost my husband, I was so, you know, I was a mess. And now when I think about Willie and how positive he is, but he knows the outcome. Unless there's a miracle. I mean, nobody can play God. And I wouldn't be the first to do that. But he's just making each moment matter.
I think the last time I saw him, he was singing at the Aloha Tower Marketplace. And I just, I was just marveling at his diversity, you know, because he sang everything from A to Z. Just fabulous.
Well, like I mentioned, those iconic musicians, yes. How they talk about him.
And his influence, yeah.
So, so what is the takeaway on this and why was it Thanksgiving night? I just kind of felt that his attitude of gratitude was so profound and coming from this Hawaiian guy, you know, local style and local attitude, it was so different. And I told Willie, I said, you know, Willie, you have a message, not just for your people, but for all of us. And, you know, and he really does, but, you know, he doesn't spend time beating on his chest or anything. He just kind of humbly takes each moment at a time. I mean, the hardest story I ever had to do, because it breeds of what I just went through and my love for my husband and how much I miss him, you know. And so I've learned, too, that you cannot waste time with people because you just don't know when the last time will be.
So share a hug with Willie Kay this Thanksgiving. Emmy's show airs at 8 p.m. Thursday on KGMB. And then we'll be rebroadcast on later dates on KHNL and K5. You can also catch him next week at the Blue Note.
This is Ira Glass with This American Life, and I'm coming to Honolulu to do my very first event for Hawaii Public Radio. I'm going to give a speech that I call Seven Things I've Learned, which is basically just an excuse to tell a bunch of stories and play clips and play video and talk about how we make our radio show. It's Saturday, December 21st at the Hawaii Theater Center, presented by Hawaii Public Radio and Hawaii Theater Center and sponsored by Anthology Marketing Group. Tickets at hprtickets.org.
For our reality check today, we turn to Honolulu Civil Beat's Yu Hyun Jung, who covers criminal justice issues. She and photographer Corey Lam went along a tour of some of the state's prisons. Morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Yeah, I was looking at those photos. It is amazing to think, you know, what happened there at the Maui prison, the riots that we saw because of the overcrowding.
Yeah, We've been covering the issue ever since it happened, and, you know, we've written quite at length about it, but it was kind of a different experience to actually see the scene in person. And actually, a lot of the recovery and repairs have been done, but even then, we could still see some of the damage still in place. Some of the doors were still quite damaged. The supply door where the inmates had tried to get to some of the supplies, like toilet paper, was really dented, and the dents were really huge, and there were a lot of them, and you could really see the desperation in those dents. And the ceilings were supposedly repaired, but you could still see the browning from the fire damage, and you could still see the damage very much.
And I guess the space hasn't changed, so the issues of overcrowding, when you know they've got more inmates in those cells than there should be, I'm sure that was probably brought home.
Yeah, absolutely. There were still four guys to a cell. The overcrowding was still an issue, so it pretty much was a ticking time bomb. So the operating capacity at MCCC was 301, but there were 422 people there, so that's about 40% over capacity. When we visited there, there were four people to a cell at Module B where the riot started, and When the media went into that module, there were guys kicking and screaming and banging on the doors, and they were screaming, not necessarily at those people who were touring, but yelling things like, overcrowded, help, I need toilet paper, things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure that's got to make an impact when you're walking through there, knowing what triggered that riot to begin with.
Absolutely. And we had an opportunity to actually go inside one of the cells that were empty, and you could see how small the cells were. And each cell has metal bunk beds, and there are two beds, and there are four guys. So if you're not sleeping on one of those beds, you're sleeping on the floor, and there's definitely not enough room for two guys to sleep on the floor. So if you're on the floor, you're probably sleeping next to the toilet, which doesn't have amazing plumbing.
Well, I know this isn't the only prison you toured. You also took the tour of all the prisons here on Oahu as well.
That's correct. Although when we went to Waiava, there was a medical emergency of one of the inmates, so it had to be abruptly canceled. But all the other facilities, we had an opportunity to have a good look around. So pretty much the only facility that's not overcrowded is Halava, and that's the prison where only sentenced inmates go.
Now, I'm sure, public safety, they did this last year as well, but it really gives journalists a better handle on reporting when time comes for the lawmakers to take up this issue with the legislature.
That's right. I think it's a totally different experience to see the problems for themselves than to just write about it and read about it. Because when you see the facilities crumbling down and the people inside of it, the problem actually becomes way more real.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you making time for us today to talk about the prison tours, and kudos to your photographer for those pictures.
Thank you for having me.
That was reporter Yu Young Jung with today's reality check. Read the story and see the photos online at civilbeat.org.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the Scheidler Family Foundation in support of the Scheidler College of Business at UH Manoa, offering the Executive MBA. Scheidler.hawaii.edu.
Coming Saturday, December 14th, bring some Celtic flavor to your holiday season with Celtic Waves Winter Solstice Concert at HPR's Atherton Studio. In Scottish and Irish tradition, they'll commemorate the longest night and the shortest day of the year with soulful airs, rollicking jigs and reels, and a few tall tales told in between. Get your tickets now at hprtickets.org. Sponsored by Bonnie Rice and the Rice Partnership, Wealth Management.
We look at the legacy of U.S. Senator Daniel K. Inouye in today's Backyard Quiz. The McKinley High School graduate spent most of his life serving his country, first in the U.S. Army as part of the 442 during World War II, and his nearly 50 years as a U.S. Senator. He was well known for securing federal funding for Hawaii projects, but he was said to dislike having things named after him. However, upon his death in 2012, several projects have been named for him. The Daniel K. Inouye International Airport in Honolulu,
Hawaii Island's Daniel K. Inouye Highway, also known as Saddle Road, and the Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope on Maui. There was one place, however, that he got to see grace his name. It is the Inouye Hall Marksmanship Center at the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. So why is it named after him? Well, Inouye and former South Carolina Senator and Citadel alum Fritz Holling secured $3 million in federal appropriations for it. No winners today. We stumped you on that one. That's today's quiz. If you have an idea for one, please send it to talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. As you start to get into the shopping spirit, this weekend, the Lanikai Kailua chapter of the Outdoor Circle holds its annual fundraising plant sale this Saturday from 8 to 11. In our effort to highlight our Hawaii forests and gardens, we stumbled across a training program that helps women behind bars learn green skills that hopefully will lead to jobs once they complete their sentences. We begin our conversation with Wei Lee at the Kailua Arbor Tree Giveaway. He works with Smart Trees Hawaii.
Arbor Day is really to celebrate trees, and we hope everybody bring a tree or two home and plant it to our urban forest. If we step back and look at the large picture, we are giving out thousands of trees, and they're all going to go into homes and families. So we want them to be planted and grow our forests, and that's what we really want.
And we've been trying to, I guess, educate our gardeners just so that when they choose the right tree for the right place, that the trees will thrive.
Correct. So I often ask them, where would you plant this tree? And of course, somebody said, backyard. I said, no. What neighborhood? What climate? So for example, mountain apple will grow well in colder climate, not down in hot coastal area. And we have the Ojai, which is just love the beach. So we talk and work with them, work with the families.
And so you've got a few more trees left. You've got Chuko, you've got a couple mac nuts, a couple kukui nut trees, but pretty much you're cleared out.
Yeah, we have 450 trees plus donations. They're all pretty much cleared out, and these trees we want to give it away to Lenny Kailua Outdoor Circle. They have a plant sale, and then the proceeds will go to benefit the Women Corrections Facility program.
And so you folks are involved in helping to teach those classes, is that right?
Yes, we have secured a grant from the state, from the Kaunani program, to hire a teacher, a horticulturist, to teach the women how to care for the plants. So they've been doing that for 8 weeks, caring for the trees, and the training started in May of this year. So they've been trained, and they just finished a 6-month course. Actually, the curriculum was co-developed with the city's Division of Urban Forests, so they would have the right skills that they look for. And we also came up with the DUF from the city to recruit when they leave. So we want to train them, give them practice, and give them opportunities to apply for positions at the city.
You know, we talked to two women who are serving time at the Community Correctional Center on Oahu's Windward Side. Hyacinth has been involved in the prison program and was glad to talk about what she's gotten out of it.
We have classes from hydroponics, learning how to set up a hydroponic system. We have horticulture classes. We have a lady that is teaching us propagation. And we also have, we learn how to, we have the Better Business Bureau come down and teach us a class. And we also have a class that comes and teaches us how to rise up above the poverty and how we can help ourselves when we get out of prison, to get good jobs and have a better future and get a green job.
And so were you interested in, you know, gardening and growing plants before you started this program?
No, I wasn't. When I was little, my tutu used to teach me, but when I got into the facility and I got into this program, I just fell in love with this program because there's a lot to offer. We also sell our lettuce. We grow hydroponic lettuce and we sell it to the food lands in Oahu. And that's what generates our program. The monies that come in, it goes right back into the program.
What is it about growing things that you enjoy so much?
This program is also a healing program. So when I see things like in a seed bottle or in a seed pack, and I put it and I start to grow it, and when I see the growth, it allows me to grow spiritually and physically, and it helps me to learn how to reintegrate. We've also had the governor come down there, Governor Ige. He has come down there. We have different people from Department of Public Safety that comes down. We have different people that come down from the colleges, the universities on Oahu. And we have a lot of dignitaries that come down there. I would like to work in a nursery, or maybe like for Lowe's, someplace where there's gardening. You know, and so I've been given a few jobs when I get out of here. So I'm going to look into that.
Hyacinth is scheduled to get out in 2 years. Another inmate, Marissa Eisenberg, believes her short time in the Learning to Grow program has changed her.
You know, when I first started, I was like, yay, I can eat things that I don't eat at the facility. It was the more fun part, but it wasn't like, once I started working with the plants, and I start to worry, like, when one starts to lose too many leaves or the leaves start to turn color, then I start to really panic. And then it taught me to calm myself down and to ask questions and not to be afraid to be more assertive and ask the questions I need for help. And like Kaya said, when I plant something and something grows, I'm like, I made that. Like, to some people, they might just see lettuce, but that's my lettuce. And that's what I got out of it, is that if I put my mind to it, I can do something. And it doesn't matter if it's just lettuce or eggplants or kale, it's anything.
So really a kind of sense of pride, too.
Yeah, a lot of, like, healthy pride. I'm from Maui, so when I go back to Maui, I recently learned there's a place at the college, and it's Waipono Farmhouse, or Waipono Farm Greenhouse Hydroponics and Aquaponics. I know it's a course. I'm not sure if I would have to be enrolled in college to work there or if it's, like, a volunteer thing. But once I'm able to, I want to contact them as soon as possible so I can get my foot in the door. I never in a million years thought this would be something I like doing, but I do. At Hydros, I'm a worm manager, so I like raise worms, and that's also something, like, I'm terrified of everything, like all bugs, insects, everything. But I like raise these worms, and it's like I never thought that I could do something like that. So working at Hydros has taught me that I can do that. And I talk to my mom every day, and I tell her, like, oh, I want to go back to Maui and do this, do that. And she's like, who is this person? Who are you? Because I know that I didn't think I'd ever want to, like, coming to help with trees, random, but I love it. And so that's, I definitely, like she said, I'm going to get a job with the green.
Right. So it wasn't something that you did or had an interest in when you were little?
When I moved to Maui, my grandmother, she loved gardening, but it wasn't anything I was ever interested in. But now it's something I actually enjoy doing. And when I have a bad day or a bad weekend and I get to go to work, I always come back to the facility happy, which is really good. I've only been with this in Hydros for 3.5 months maybe. And I think in that 3.5 months, I've changed a lot within myself, and not only something I can see, but other people can see, and that makes me happy. And I didn't think it would just be something because of a small job I have. Other people might say it's a small job, but it's a huge job. Like, we might only get to go for 2 hours that day or 3 hours that day, but it's affected the rest of my life. So I think people, like, should try for a change. Like, I asked to be hired for Hydros, not having any idea what it was really about. I think people need to take, like, healthy risks and all that. So that's what Hydros has taught me, you know, and to keep an open mind, to not judge people or things by any means, and that just because of my background, that doesn't mean that's what my future is. And I didn't think growing lettuce would really change that, but it has.
The Lani Kailua Outdoor Circle has long seen the value of its partnership with its neighbors. Terry Beret is a clinical psychologist. She's also the co-chair of the program, which started 2 decades ago.
I think in, 2016, we got a grant that was allowed us to expand our hydroponic system. And that's when we were able to build the program up and start hiring more people to come down and do the teaching for the women. And so we every week, we hopefully sell close to, and our goal is 200 heads of lettuce to Foodland. It goes to all the different Foodlands on well. We really enjoy it.
That's right.
We have so much fun. Mm-hmm. And we work along, the kind of the goal is we, as volunteers who have the knowledge of the plants, we just work alongside the women. We work together and we teach and work, and that's our model.
And so, gosh, since you've been involved in this program for 20 years, I mean...
Well, Anne has.
Okay, and how long have you been involved here?
I'd say about 7 years.
7 years, okay. I don't know, just anything you want to share just about the, you know, how you've managed to grow the program? I mean, you know, because from my understanding, the training is really pretty, it's like, I don't know how many weeks, but it's a lot more than just labor in a prison setting.
That's correct. And we have two sets of people. We have some that are more long-term, and then we have some that are just coming in for 6 months or so many months, and then they are transitioned out. So we get the cream of the crop women. They're really ideal. They're hand-picked by the sergeant, Sergeant Haku. And so we just have a really nice bunch of gals.
And they're motivated.
And they're very motivated. So when we hire people, this is the Lanikai Outdoor Circle, hires people to come on down and instruct. They all do a lovely job because they just like giving to the women, and the women give back.
Ann Latham is the other co-chair of the program. She explains more about its origins.
We get only a few of the women who are cleared to come down. And the ones that do, they may start out not too enthusiastic, but then they end up very enthusiastic. When it started about 20 years ago, the warden we had then had a couple of goals in mind. He wanted us to beautify the campus. He said it needed planting, and also he said he wanted to get all the women outside, which is very important, I think, for anyone to get outside. And so he encouraged us to do that. There was an old nursery that was there from the days when it was the youth facility, and it was just a terrible
neglected
condition. It had been abandoned. So that's where we started. We started refurbishing that and with various community volunteer help and
donations,
lots of donations and grants and whatnot, and we made it into a really nice area.
That's great. Well, it's awesome. Well, thank you so much for what you do and for keeping this program going.
The women also raise goats at the facility, and they propagate plants that will be sold at this weekend sale at Kailua Elementary School. Again, it's a fundraiser event for the Outdoor Circle and the Learning to Grow program.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from Diamond Head Theater, presenting The Sound of Music, featuring songs such as My Favorite Things and Climb Every Mountain, opens this Friday. DiamondHeadTheater.com.
HPR fills the, I guess, non-commercial gap that's left by providing a variety of both news and entertainment and quality intellectual programming that you don't see or hear. And I think it provides sort of more truth-telling to the community than you get on many stations. Hi, my name is Bruce McEwen, and I'm a sustaining member of HPR.
That is it for today. Up tomorrow, who is the Internet Society, and what were they doing in Hawaii this month? We do like hearing from you. Call our talkback line. Leave us your comments. The number to do that, 808-792-8217. You can also email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. We are on Facebook at The Conversation HPR and Twitter at HI Conversation. And if you missed any of this show or want to find a past one, look under HPR News and Talk for The Conversation on hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.